So I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, "I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!"
Just happen to love this new music, and it's just one of those things. Still getting used to the fades on it. Welcome to the Ed Springson on the MVM Radio Network, brought to you by LouisvillePolitics.com as well. Don't forget, when you check out LouisvillePolitics.com, that you join our RSS feed, click on the sponsors to help pay for the show, and all the other neat little things that go along with checking in and staying in touch with what's going on in Louisville and indeed around the world. But here's a guy we always want to stay in touch with, Mr. Ed Martin. How are you, sir?
All right, Mr. Springsteen. I survived.
You survived? What do you mean you survived?
Yeah.
First cold day of the year?
Well, you know, I survived rugby season at age 50. I terrorized them. But no, now that rugby season's over, I've gotten back into martial arts. So, you know, those first few classes, you just survive.
Well, 50 years old,
oh,
if you're doing all that,
God,
I guess surviving is a good word.
What has happened to the you know, almost being able to do the split and the balance? It's all gone, and
man, I've got to tell you, I lost that a long time ago. Well, we're the same age, so I lost that a long time ago, you know, and you know, I used to be the skinny guy that could do all of that stuff, and now I'm in great shape, and it's a round shape, so... you know, things change as we get older, man. It's just the way it is. And
I slipped out, but yeah, I'm getting back into it. And I literally just got into the car from having done that. And I don't think I think I'm gonna be okay tomorrow. I don't think I'm gonna walk around like I've got, you know, baseball bats for legs that won't bend. And I think I'll be okay.
Well, playing rugby kind of helped you keep a little bit of shape, so maybe you're a little bit looser than you normally would when you used to do this stuff. I remember times before when you were doing this, back when we were doing the show at KJK and actually meeting at their studio every week. There was times you came in that you were kind of tight, man. I got to be honest with you. I wasn't sure you were going to get through the show. So, you know, I was scared you're going to get lockjaw or something. Your muscles were hurting so bad. So it's pretty cool. Glad to see you survived it, man. And speaking of surviving, we've got a lot going on tonight. I tell you, we've got a story coming out, and there's a reason this story is impressive. Do you remember the name Chauncey Carthen?
Chauncey, that was the cop that shot the kid?
Yes, very good. Thank you.
Out of him or something like that, yeah.
Thank you, yes. Chauncey Carthen was the guy back in September of 2012, a little over a year ago. He was a guy who shot a 22-year-old. Chauncey is an LMPD detective who was in an unmarked black police car at night, drunk, following a guy. The guy pulls over. Chauncey pulls in behind him and shoots the kid for no reason. In less than a minute, then tries to lie and say that the kid refused to follow orders, that, you know, he identified himself as a cop, which he didn't do. There was a cell phone video involved and everything else. So for the last over a year now, he's been on paid administrative leave. And what makes this story interesting is he actually just resigned. The story came out today
that he just resigned. Why don't we call it what it is? Taxpayer-funded extended vacation.
Well, there you go. That's exactly it.
Yeah.
Well, he actually resigned. Why he resigned is the puzzling question. Chances are he probably resigned because he's probably going to go to jail when this thing's over. He definitely cost the department a lot of money, so he's probably given the option to resign or be fired. But the reason this guy is so interesting is because of our conversation last night. Last night we were talking about Jack Conway going to go after his first first case as an attorney general at the Kentucky Supreme Court involving a drug investigation that his office was involved in when they were not invited. They took it upon themselves. Chauncey Carthen was the guy at the center of the leak, letting Jack Conway know his brother Matt was being investigated for drug use. Small world, isn't it? In 2010.
Yeah. Well, we know where he got his beer money now, right?
Exactly. in 2010, Chauncey Carthen was disciplined in the wake of the drug investigation into Matt Conway, who, of course, is Kentucky Attorney General Jack Conway's brother. Carthen was actually talking out loud about the case in a bar when another detective that was there with him, Ronald Russ, heard him talking about it. And Russ is the one who actually tipped off Conway and told Matt Conway that he was the subject of this investigation. Here's the interesting thing. Russ was fired. Carthen was reprimanded. Police Chief Robert White, and we all know about him at the time, thank God he's gone, fired Ronald Russ because he said he'd violated the department's policies on truthfulness because he actually tried to lie about this in the first place, but he didn't keep police business confidential. So Russ brought discredit to the department when he disclosed this to Matt Conway that he was being investigated by the police. He also essentially told Matt Conway to get his house cleaned up and everything else, and he waited 2 days to go investigate the house, which is why they didn't find any drugs or anything else there. He gave Matt Conway time to clean it up, you know, like Katie King deal. But what was interesting, too, is Matt Conway was never disciplined. I mean, he did not get anything. He lied to police investigators as well, was under oath, committed perjury when he did it. You know, the AG's brother, Matt Conway, was under oath. So he committed perjury when he lied to police investigators, and there was no punishment for Dave Stengel at all on this, even though Russ was fired and Carthen was reprimanded. So I thought that was an amazing coincidence. You know, and what's really interesting, this one even further, Detective Scott Wilson was another one involved in this. He actually allowed Matt Conway to read the complaint that was accusing him of drug involvement. And, you know, he's the one that gave him the time to clean his house up. So it was really interesting because this is, you know, since the conversation last night with Jack Conway, Carthen's name is back in the news. Resignation really isn't that much to talk about. But the relationship to the whole Jack Conway incident that we were talking about, I thought was more than coincidental. Would you agree?
Well, yeah, I would agree. Well, there we are on the cusp again, you know, having fun with it. But I'd be curious to see how it all plays out, is whether the pension still stays in. You know, not only are we going to – not all, you know, it's bad enough a drunk cop goes around shooting people, whether they're saints or not. But, yeah,
right.
This resignation, is it also – could it also be a roundabout way to protect the pension? Maybe sweep this thing under the rug and let it go,
well,
you know, have it go away, and he's not a cop while it, you know, while he's having to face this in court? Does that protect his taxpayer-funded pension?
You know, that's a very, very interesting question there, and I tell you, you know, I haven't went that far with it. I know, from what I understand, and somebody can correct me on this date if I'm wrong, and I'll look it up before the show's over, but from what I understand, Carthen was actually on the police force, joined LMPD in like 1993, so he'd be right at that 20-year mark. But it's really interesting because here a guy is, you know, he's in a position to shoot this 22-year-old unarmed man when if they would have done their job correctly, they would have fired him for bringing discredit to the police force, for talking about this case openly in a bar with people around, just like they did Russ Wilson for speaking about this case openly. If they would have fired him, he wouldn't have been in that position. Now, this 22-year-old has a lawsuit out there against the city, LMPD, and everything else because a drunk cop shot him for no reason at all. And this is going to be big bucks. This guy's going to get paid. He's not, you know, he's not going to walk away. And, you know, so he's going to get paid big bucks for this. So this is very, very interesting just because Carthen's involved. And you know, I'm puzzled. I'm not really puzzled, but I still have this nagging question in my head. And I'll tell you what it is. You know, we used to talk about Mel Ignato a lot back when that was big news around here. Mel, of course, is dead now. But Mel Ignato had gotten away with the murder of Brenda Sue Schaefer. But what he went to jail for many years about was perjury. He lied under oath about killing her.
Yep.
We have these cops who lied under oath. We have an attorney, Matt Conway, who lied under oath, who was, you know, helped with a cover-up by his attorney general brother, Jack Conway, who should be disbarred accordingly for being involved in this, and yet he gets elected attorney general. But we've got all of these perjury charges sitting out here, known perjury charges sitting out here, felonious perjury charges sitting out here, but these people are connected and politicians and lawyers, so nothing gets done to them. Dave Stengel, of course, who was the ultimate part of this cover-up thing, you know, decided not to run for re-election because he knew he'd have a problem with it, and now he works at Jack Conway's office, at the Attorney General's office, making six figures a year. This is Louisville Democratic politics at its finest. And that's the thing that really bugs me the most, and I can't get that nagging thing out of my head. And for some reason or another, I'm having one hell of a problem reconciling the fact that nobody will do anything about this, or did. Now, I understand this is a couple of years old now. This is 2010 when all this went down. But, you know, it's interesting because, once again, we're going to pay out thousands of dollars because of a rogue cop based on, you know, a situation that was filled with lies. I just don't get it. I don't understand what we're doing in Louisville doing this kind of stuff. You know, we've also got other stories going on. Walmart now. Walmart. It's always the funniest thing. But Walmart now has decided they're going to build a new supercenter on Outer Loop, right across from Jefferson Mall, right where the old supercenter used to be. The old Walmart. They shut that Walmart down for a reason. Now they're going to go ahead and open up a new supercenter there after scrapping original plans a couple of years ago. Madonna Flood, of course, is on board with this, and of course I guarantee you she's getting paid. She always does. But what makes it fascinating is you've got a Walmart supercenter further down Outer Loop towards the 3rd Street Road area, right past National Turnpike, right on the corner there. You've got two different Walmart supercenters in that area. The Walmart that was there at that location originally closed because of high crime and bad clientele. You know, so here's where I'm having this paradox with this situation. Don't get me wrong. I think it's great to build. We want to build. We want to create jobs, even if they're Walmart jobs, as much as it turns my stomach to talk about low-paid wage jobs. But we've got this Walmart supercenter. The reason the original one closed down, and I'm going to be quite frank with you people, you had high theft there. You had high crime there. That Walmart could not sustain itself because they could not secure it. And quite frankly, and I apologize for being this way, you know, but the majority of those problems were created by the lowest income of the low. So if you've got high crime, you can't keep the place secure, you close those doors, then about 5 or 6 years later, you decide to build something bigger there. I have to ask myself, why there, when you've got two Walmart supercenters right there available? We continue talking about the West End and not being able to get any sustainable jobs down there. We complain about the West End being this high crime area with high theft, high crime, and everything else. It's the same comparable as the situation on Outer Loop. Why are we not talking about building this Walmart downtown on the West End in an area that needs revitalization more than Jefferson Mall area does?
I've always wondered that. I wonder, granted, downtown is built up pretty good, but you've got to get the right, granted, it is built up. Everything's built up down there. So either they're going to have to come up with some brownfields legislation so it's not going to go in on an old location, or it's, and God, a lot of them, you know, the preservationists, there's a lot of old homes down there. In order to, you need some acreage for these big stores. And they're going to have to clean it out somewhere. They're going to take out, you know, old buildings or something. Yeah, to me, that's one of the things I've always wondered. Why isn't there big retail? But then when you go down there, it's pretty compact right now. It's just, it would take some demolition and some, you know, perhaps some brownfields, depending on what kind of site you would want to build the Walmart on for retail purposes. So,
I'm glad you mentioned that. It's going to take some demolition because here's the deal. There's existing structures there. They're going to demolish the whole property there. They've got existing structures there. They're going to demolish the whole property there and rebuild from the ground up. So demolition isn't a problem here. And, of course, Madonna Flood goes on record
saying, in downtown, you've got to, whether it's residential or you know, retail or commercial or whatever, it's built up. So you don't have enough space that oftentimes probably owned by one owner that you can deal with. You know, you want to take out a certain area and you may have 20 homes that got to go and seven of them don't want to sell. You know, what do you
think? Well, I think there's enough. I know for a fact, I've been in downtown Louisville quite often actually, and I go through the West End quite often and I see a lot of demolished properties, dead neighborhoods, boarded up structures that when combined, that are nothing but a blight. Nobody's living there doing anything that when combined would make plenty of space to build this. Let's go to the phones real quick. I believe this is Paul from Stop It. Is this Paul?
It is. Hi, gentlemen.
How are you, sir?
Hey, listen, you've punched the button again here with this Walmart thing. I got two angles, 2 points on this Walmart thing. First of all, there was a Walmart that was ultimately built out off of the Greenbelt. I believe the name of the road that they actually created was Raggard Road. And it was a Walmart Supercenter. It had been planned for a while. And during the process of Walmart trying to get all the necessary zoning approvals, the city of Louisville held that project hostage because they wanted to force Walmart to actually locate that particular store in somewhere closer to Western Louisville.
Right.
Ultimately, Walmart prevailed. They did not find that any of the sites that were presented to them was suitable, and they ended up building out there in southwestern Jefferson County. Now, having said that, they did consider the Brown and Williamson or the Philip Morris site there at 18th and Broadway.
Right.
It's a multi-acre site.
The 14-acre site they just recently raised.
Yeah. They absolutely considered that, but then they rejected it, and I don't recall the reasons, but they did reject it, okay? Item number two, I just saw a news story, and Springston, this is going to tie in exactly with what you just stated.
Okay.
News story on local television just last night was commenting on the fact that the city of Louisville, west of I-65, has more than 3,000 vacant and abandoned properties.
Thank you.
3,000. And I'm with you on that, and that is they could certainly cobble together some type of land package that would be suitable for a Walmart should Walmart want to do that. But I'm not sure that they have made any efforts to do just that. Okay.
Well, see, and I think that's part of the problem. Go ahead.
So since they just announced this big project to revitalize Western Louisville, and they've got all these wonderfully attractive concept drawings out there. I didn't hear that they were looking for any big box or big retailers. Now, hopefully they are, because that part of Jefferson County is woefully underserved.
But well, see, if you remember, But if you remember, though, just last, what was last week or the week before? I think it was 2 weeks ago. You know, they killed alcohol sales after midnight at the liquor stores because of the West End. They said that the alcohol and the liquor stores at the West End were creating all the crime that was keeping all the retailers from coming there. Sherry Bryan Hamilton went on record as saying that she was tired of having to leave her neighborhood to go shopping or anything else because they couldn't do anything there because of high crime because of alcohol sales at a liquor store, which we all know is a joke. But here we've got a great example of a Walmart who did not want to go to this property again because they had a high crime rate because of high drugs, the wrong clientele, the drug slugs and thugs destroyed the area, and it's still like that. But they're going to invest in this super center there. Why? Because it's predominantly white and not black? I don't understand. Why are we not bringing the incentives? Why is Sherry Bryan Hamilton not
out there? One of the problems, and I'm sure Walmart has looked at it, you know, these homes may be blighted. These homes may be a foreclosure or a foreclosure. You know, it only takes one or two preservationists to just absolutely wreck the cost of building somewhere, you know. And whether that's going to be a Tom Owen, they can't make money off of it, or somebody else, just going to stand up and, let's look at some of the stuff like Lexington Road next to that burger place.
Well,
the last thing you know, but no, let's take it out. And they wouldn't do it.
I'm sure.
Well, you may have a point there. Paul, go ahead. I know you're out somewhere. Can I get background noise?
Preservationists certainly can throw a whole lot of delays into a proposed project. But when it comes to the Walmart projects in and around Jefferson County so far, I don't think preservationists have ever been a factor. I just don't. I think it's just good old-fashioned.
Not out in Jefferson County because you've got a lot of 1950s, 60s, and 70s houses.
Do you think preservationists, in the city,
it could be a problem, but, you know, I just sometimes
reality,
I think you got to think there's what's Walmart's incentive at that point, too, because – As Sherry Bryan Hamilton said, she doesn't like to leave her neighborhood to go get it. They're kind of in a position where it's like they don't have to build one down there because if you want to go there, you got to get on a bus and go there. It's not like Target is building down there to take market share from them or Kmart or anybody
else. Well, sure, you've also got a constant TARC bus running up and down Broadway in that area. Downtown has a constant TARC presence on just about every street corner. It's not hard to get a bus downtown. It's hard to get a bus in Oklahoma, but it's not hard to get a bus downtown. And when we look at this, though, I mean, you just mentioned preservationists and stuff. Let's look at the Colonial Gardens, for example. The preservationists totally destroyed what could have been done with that property. Now we've still got a dilapidated building standing there that's going to continue standing there because nobody's going to put the millions of dollars into it to do what needs to be done. It needs to be torn down. But if that Colonial Gardens, let's look at that property itself. If that same Colonial Gardens would have been downtown.
I'm kind of thinking that the Tom Owen allusion was to that. I mean, it's an old.
Do you think they would have cared
building,
about that building if it was in the West End?
Memories with it. But it's a wreck.
But would they have cared about that building if it was in the West End? I mean, that's the question, and they wouldn't have. Nobody is going to sit here, no preservationist in their right mind, and I know most preservationists are not in their right mind, so I understand what I'm saying here, okay? But no preservationist in their right mind is going to go to a neighborhood that has a half a million square feet of available space that's full of nothing but abandoned, boarded up, shotgun dilapidated houses. They're not going to fight to keep those.
You've really hit in the bullseye because this isn't about whether Walmart wants to do business. I'm sure that they would love to have the opportunity to have a super center in Western Louisville. The problem is the policies of this city that, number one, allow blighted areas to fester like they do. Number two, that allow folks in these depressed areas to stay depressed because, number three, the city's policies are so oppressive and anti-business and some would say anti-family that places like Walmart simply say, we don't want to fight that battle. We can go someplace else and have an easier time with less hassle. So, you know, people who want to blame Walmart for making decisions to places like Western Louisville, they are absolutely Pollyannish, because it isn't Walmart that has created the environment. It's the city government and the city leaders that are the ones that have allowed Western Louisville to stay in its deplorable condition that it's been in for more than 40 years. And your lady, Sherry Bryant Hamilton, is nothing more than a caretaker, not a leader.
You bet your butt. And that's exactly where I'm going to, because we know the Democratic politicians, they like that. They want to have this area of town that is predominantly African-American, so you keep your thumb on top of the black population. Do not give them the same opportunities that you get across this city to try to better yourself and get ahead. Walmart may be low-wage jobs, but they're still jobs. When you look at a McDonald's, Indies, and all the other low-wage jobs, the only jobs that they have downtown that are low-wage jobs are these fast-food restaurant jobs, for the most part. And when you go down and you look at those jobs, they're not hurting for people. They've always got a line of people waiting to work.
Now, keep in mind, Ed, that down at, I think it's down around 22nd and Broadway, the Kroger Corporation has partnered with Lenny Lyles and a couple of other people in that center. They've been down there for 20-plus years. And the Kroger Corporation, those are union jobs. Those are union jobs, okay? So Kroger's been down there a long time, and no matter what the issues are, Kroger has figured out how to deal with it, okay?
Well, and they're also a very limited store, too. There's not going to be a Kroger Supercenter down there. Go ahead.
That's only because there wasn't enough land available when they built their store originally, and then apparently the city hasn't decided that Kroger and the other shops down in that center need some assistance in the form of getting the damn government out of the way and helping these stores expand. Because Kroger, as you well know, Kroger has been on an expansion program for the last 5 years. They have remodeled and enlarged, and they have spent hundreds of millions of dollars in the process. So why hasn't Western Louisville enjoyed those things? The answer is Kroger has looked at the policies and politics of the city of Louisville and has said that particular store is not very high on our list to remodel.
And that's because we're not making it available, and any land available or giving them the opportunity to, as you just pointed out. Because for me, when I look at this, the Kroger situation being such a small store and not being able to expand, and I see all of these daggone properties, 3,000 properties is what you talked about. That's not counting the buildings and everything else that are just basically sitting there that a company owns. They just leave them sitting there. The 3,000 properties they're referring to are mainly these shotgun houses and stuff. But if you really wanted to clean up downtown, then what you have to do is use the same mindset, and as much as I hate it, it's a reality. We use eminent domain to kick people out of Cherokee area so that they could build a couple of runways there for UPS. UPS did nothing but create $8.50 an hour part-time jobs. But the city of Louisville made out like bandits, not because of the jobs and the taxes. They made out like bandits because of the daggone runway fees that you get for taking off and landing from UPS. That's where they make their money at the airport. It's not these jobs that the city gives a crap about. It's the fees that they can charge the planes for landing and taking off. So when you look at this, we can use eminent domain to make sure UPS gets to pay us an exorbitant amount of money to land aircraft. Then we could certainly use eminent domain to get rid of these dilapidated properties that are doing nothing but getting further and further eroded to create a business environment to create jobs for the people, can we not?
Yep. You're touching upon another sore spot. Eminent domain is not my...
Well, my friend, I've come to the conclusion with you, I touch on a lot of sore spots. Go ahead.
Eminent domain is not a tool that I advocate ever. Ever.
I never advocate for it either, but my point is a simple one. They're going to use it when it's convenient for them, all right? Then if you're going to use it anyway, we're not going to stop eminent domain from occurring. We know this. I can't stand the fact that they use this to cheat and rob people. But in this particular situation, what I'm looking at is run down, abandoned properties. You've got people in California that own these properties that refuse to pay the taxes on it. It's the city doesn't want to tear them down because they say it costs $5,000 to $10,000 to destroy this property, but they're not getting anything in return for it. A lot of these properties are becoming these drug houses and everything else. So now you've got criminals going in there, putting drugs on the street, which raises your crime level, which means more officers and more costs. I'm not a proponent for eminent domain. I hate it. But the reality is, if you're going to use it, then why not use it to help people instead of using it to hurt people like we typically do?
Well,
we had talked before about the city in California that was, it wasn't eminent domain, it was delinquent tax bills and stuff. And they go in and they just basically took them. Like,
sure.
Their money, take it. Like, though, if they're dilapidated, odds are there, you know, there's code violations or something else that the buildings can just simply be condemned. Yeah, you clean enough of them up, and all of a sudden, yeah, you've managed to quilt, you know, like quilt work, you've managed to put together a decent patch of land.
Well, you look at a lot of these properties. A lot of these properties are going to be assessed very, very low because they are. So you're looking at a lot of these properties where your taxes every year, your property taxes are going to be between $100 and $200 a year. Most of these places are 4 and 5 years behind on the property taxes. So you're talking about an expense of $500 to $600. Do you mean to tell me that a Kroger or a Walmart or a major corporate retailer will not come in and pay the city the delinquent taxes and buy up a block full of this property for a few thousand bucks just to destroy it and build something there that's going to create a retail environment in the West End? See, that's what I'm getting at. So if you want to use a tax base, that's fine. If you want to use eminent domain, that's fine. My point is, we have options here. And nobody cares because the Democratic leadership in this town loves leaving the West End alone to fend for themselves and making the people in the West End stay further and further behind. And we have a great example of it right here. The reason they shut that Walmart down is for the same exact reason they continue whining and crying that they don't want to put anything in the West End and can't get anybody there. High crime, theft, drugs. You couldn't go in that parking lot. And folks, I come from Oklahoma. That's where I grew up. I know about this property quite well. I used to go in that Walmart, but I still spend a lot of my time out in Oklahoma visiting friends and things like that. And I had to quit going to that Walmart, and they finally shut the thing down because you were scared to get out of your car in that parking lot. Somebody was going to jack you up, or you were going to get shot inside the store. That was the reality. That was the vibe. That's why they shut it down. And this is a new, and this is a new word for your Democrats who want to continue trying to hide crime. But Donna Flood goes on record and says, well, they closed because I guess Walmart was having some internal growing pains. Walmart wasn't having internal growing pains. Walmart only cares about one thing, profit. And when people are scared to come into your store because of a crime that you won't take care of, that we pay you taxes to take care of, they're not making profit. They're losing money. That's why they shut the store. So this whole internal growing pains is going to be the new way of saying we have a high-crime retailer that's shutting the doors, and they're going to use internal growing pains, I guess. That's a Madonna Flood thing, not that I would expect any less, as being the excuse for it. So, you know, we've got to start looking at the realities here, and the reality is that we still have thousands of people in this area that are getting shafted into the politics. Does that make sense?
When it comes to Madonna Flood, it does.
Go ahead, Martin.
No, I was going to say, yeah, it absolutely makes sense because, you know, it's... Yeah, I don't even know where to go with it because I'm out here in the East End and we can't seem to stop stuff from being built. So,
well, sure. You guys are going to have a cop there in 1 minute if something goes wrong because they're going to protect the money out in the East End. But you go to the South End or you go to the West End and you need a cop there, they're going to wait 10 minutes to give the crook time to get away because they don't want to shoot out. They're not going to have that problem where you're at. They don't care about us. And I'm not trying to be mean here, but when it comes to Louisville, everything is socioeconomic. And it's Democratic politicians. Yeah. That's the reality.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to – and it's so much easier, and it's going to get you off on a tangent, but it's so much easier to buy the votes when, you know, we've talked about that before, with small business and in this case, big business. If an employer comes down there and has employed a lot of people, then those people aren't as easily bought with discretionary funds or under the tables, or, you know, they can't be persuaded as easy because they begin to build a measure of independence. You know, they don't they perhaps if they had it down there, they wouldn't. Not as many people would show up to protest tarp route cuts or something because they'd say, "Well, right here. I walked to the store. It's all good. Don't worry about it."
Well, and, you know, and that's the truth, and that's the thing, and the other part of that I think has a lot to do with what you just said. I walked to the store. You know, out here outside of the city proper, if you will, you know, you don't see a lot of people walking to the store. They like to drive everywhere. Even though the stores are side by side, they would rather drive everywhere. You know, in downtown Louisville, they don't want you driving everywhere. They want you using public transportation to try to force you into that and forcing you to walk. You know, downtown Louisville right now has an identity crisis, and it goes all the way into the West End. And real simply, it's this. Back in the 20s and 30s, all these shotgun houses were built because people were able to walk to work. They were able to walk to the corner store. All those corner stores that built downtown are gone. All those businesses, the retailers that were downtown primarily in the West End, are gone. So all of these houses that are stuck down there right now are only there because the city of Louisville dropped the ball and didn't change with the times. You can go to any other major metropolitan city anywhere, and let's go to Nashville, for example. We like to compare ourselves to Nashville. What you've got is a center cluster in downtown Nashville that takes care of all the government functions, sort of like our deal around 6th and Jefferson and the courthouse and all of that stuff, Council Hall, all that shit. You got all of that stuff right there. But outside of that city corner there, that corridor, you've got lively entertainment on both sides. It doesn't matter whether you go left, right, up, or down from that city corridor. They have developed the entire city. That's why we talk about the nightlife in Nashville. I'll be honest with you. I don't do any major, what you would call, partying in Louisville. If I want to go to the bars and listen to music, I'll take a weekend and go down to Nashville because there's always something to do. You can walk to all these different places because there's something to do. You can take a taxi cab that's going to cost you practically nothing to go wherever you want to go in Nashville because there's something to do. We don't do that. If you don't go to 4th Street Live, you have put thousands of people in this hole in downtown Louisville and the immediate area in the West End, and if you don't go to 4th Street Live, they want nothing to do with you. So all these thousands of people who have been left there through the years, from the 20s and 30s, when we went through the greatest period there, have been left to fend for themselves, and they don't care. They want to send you out to the suburbs, but they want to keep taxing you for coming in. Does that make sense? It's the strangest thing I've ever seen.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I can tell you straight up, is our rugby team used to frequent a bar on 4th Street Live. Great beer, great food. But one of the problems that came up is even our local guys and stuff, you gotta pay to park.
Like, right.
Okay, so let me get this straight. Parking is not that great to begin with. You got a decent walk. You gotta know where you're going to get there. You know, walking between mm-hmm. buildings, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, it's once you get there, I guess it's okay. They are restrictive. It feels like a police state down on 4th Street Live sometimes, especially when you're
a police state.
You're a muddy, bloody rugby player, and you're looking at the cops like, yeah, I know I'm skirting the dress code. Bite me.
Well, and the thing about 4th Street Live is this. Well, I just want to point this out, too, because people will not tell you the truth about 4th Street Live. Our government protects 4th Street Live from anybody they want to determine as a threat. 4th Street Live is not open to the public. Try being a black man going down there and wearing your cap sideways. You're not going to be allowed in. You know, if you try to get in, they're going to beat your ass up and throw you out the back entrance. That's just the way it works. 4th Street Live is crime-infested and drug-infested. 4th Street Live is where the white yuppies go to do their cocaine and smoke and do anything they want to do. And the police that are supposed to be there watching this stuff, that are off-duty officers that are paid for security, are told to turn a blind eye to those incidents because they don't want to bring any negative repercussions to 4th Street Live. This is protected territory. That's protected territory, and that's what you have to deal with. So they don't want any competition with 4th Street Live. They're willing to let everything illegal continue down on 4th Street Live, and they want to tell the West End, you know, you're the problem. We can't have things there. But according to Madonna Flood, it's okay to do something like this and blame it on internal growing pains when something outside of 4th Street Live and 6th and Jefferson goes wrong. It's just amazing coincidence to me. We've got to take a break, folks. I'm way over on time. We'll be right back. You listen to the Ed Springs Show right here on the MVM Radio Network. Stay tuned.
first impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com. 502-969-8585.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springson of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
You know, this new break music, I kind of like a little bit because it's supposed to calm you down and settle your nerves. And you know, sometimes I get a little excited when I'm on here because I get so frustrated with the idiocy that goes on in this place here in Louisville and indeed around the world. I'm sick of Democratic liberal policies. I'm sick of it. Here's another example of the hypocritical garbage that we are forced to endure right here in Louisville. And in many cases around the nation. Now, I'm not sitting here making a case for Walmart being this great employer because everybody knows that they're not. But when you have no jobs and you've got an opportunity to get jobs that's going to better a community, you do it. You know,
they speak of the food deserts and stuff. And tell you what, sure. You get a big box Walmart, love them or hate them, it's got a hell of a produce department.
Yeah.
I mean, we purchase many an apple and many a carrot juice and many a meal from Walmart. It's good stuff. And
mm-hmm.
Yeah, they always talk food deserts in the West End. It's like, you know, they want large produce and food department in a Walmart superstore could go a long ways to eliminating a food desert.
Well, you're right, and, you know, and I'm not trying to say that Walmart's the greatest thing in the world because they're not. I mean, we have a great example. Last Thursday, 50 people, Walmart workers and supporters, were arrested in downtown Los Angeles last Thursday night. And they were out there protesting because of what they consider Walmart's poverty wages. Well, you know, if you don't like what Walmart pays, don't work there. And I still get frustrated as hell. We've got one guy on here, a Walmart worker, who was arrested, Anthony Goitia, or Goitia, I guess. He's a 31-year-old father of two. Says he's going to make $12,000 this year at Walmart, and it's wrong because Walmart should pay him at least $25,000 a year so that his family doesn't go hungry. Well, if your family's going hungry, then go get a different job or get a second job. Don't give me this garbage that Walmart owes you a living. They don't. But, you know, they have 50 people there. They are a low-wage company. 50 people were arrested, actually about 54. There was 500 protesters there, but the only reason they were arrested was they had a permit to protest, and when the permit expired, they refused to leave. They refused to disband. So there was no choice for the police but to arrest him for violating the permit, which, you know, I don't particularly agree with anyway. But, you know, that's the kind of stuff. So you see these things going on. I understand that a lot of people don't like Walmart. I get that. I'm one of those people who think that Walmart's business model is great for Walmart, but it's not great for employees. You know, and I think we'll all agree on that. But the reality is, you know, we're going into a neighborhood that we closed less than 5 years ago because the crime was so out of hand. People were scared to leave their cars because they were going to get jacked up and robbed. It's the same excuses that we're using for West End Louisville, and we're still not going to West End Louisville. You can't have it both ways. If that's going to be your excuse for one area, then it has to be your excuse for all areas. And it really bothers me that that happens. You know, on a side note, Ed, we've really got to get into some of these national stories. And I tell you, one in particular is really, really starting to make some waves. Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell sat down. He was with Peggy Noonan for a Wall Street Journal interview. And what was interesting wasn't the fact you sat down for this. What was interesting was that he took issue with the Tea Party, the same people he's been trying to court for the last couple of years. He now just alienated. You know, he's going on the attack against them as far as I'm concerned. I don't know any other way to do it. But he's blaming the Tea Party for all the problems in government right now, that he knows they're angry and upset at government. He agrees with them. But he thinks that they've been misled, that they're to the point where they're blaming, they're saying that they can't get the better outcomes is because the Democrats control the Senate and the White House, but they're blaming Republicans for being too feisty. Well, you can't sit here and court the Tea Party for 2 years and then tell them they're wrong. You know, that's really interesting. But what really is fascinating here is he actually went on the record when he was asked about his primary challenger, Matt Bevin. And he goes on a record and says, I don't want to be overly cocky, but I'm going to be the Republican nominee next year. Did he just put himself in harm's way, alienating the Tea Party who is supporting Bevin? Did he just get those guys organized?
Well, it depends on the degree of tea, I guess you could say. Some people are already in the Tea Party and no way in hell they're going to vote. You know, they're going to vote for somebody other than Mitch as a protest vote, if nothing else. And if, like it or not, they'll, no matter who wins, if Mitch wins the nomination, then they're still going to vote for Mitch because, you know, you understand even Mitch is better than Allison Lenders and Grimes, because hell, nobody really knows what Allison stands for right now, you know. But
all know where she comes from. She's nothing but another socialist Democrat.
I've said a long time, I think, you know, it is, a lot of people are going to piss and moan depending on which side you're on, but I think it's a healthy discourse right now. I think, you know, the Tea Party, I think like Occupy, I think Tea missed some key opportunities and they overplayed some hands and underplayed some others. And back when they got rolling back in, 2010 and whatnot, the Tea Party, you know, a lot of libertarians were warning them to get in co-opted by the Republican Party, and the Tea Party went in hard on the Republicans, not so much the third party. They got betrayed to a degree. You know, the Republicans ran, like, you know, yeah, Tea Party, you know, do this,
well,
do that.
Well, let's look at this, because
now the Tea Party, you know, the Tea Party, I think they got played a little bit, and I think they might be overplaying their hand now because they're angry. I mean, you know, a lot of Republicans.
Well, I don't think there's any doubt of that.
Weather, and they didn't. So now the Tea Party's coming back with sort of a, you know, ticked off a little bit because they were betrayed.
Well, I don't think there's any doubt that the Tea Party is overplaying their hand to some degree. They got a little cocky themselves. But, you know, here you are, Mitch McConnell. You're facing a Tea Party challenger. You know, as Dale Gillespie pointed out, it's very, very uncommon for someone to rise up in a primary and challenge a Senate minority leader or a majority leader, anybody along that level. They just stay out of it. But the Tea Party and Matt Bevin stood up and are challenging him. And he goes on record as basically taking issue with the Tea Party. When he goes and he talks about this, he talks about the outcomes and things like that. You know, he talks about how it's untrue that Republicans have been insufficiently feisty. You know, of course, Tea Party has said that Republicans haven't done a good job arguing their message, and I agree with that. I've pointed that out many times here. You know, but he says it's not true. The problem that he has with some folks is that the leaders of some of these groups are misleading their followers for profit. They raise money, they take their cut, and they spend it on political action that hurts Republicans. So he just created that division between the Tea Party and the Republicans even further as the minority leader. And it was ironic that he's talking about Tea Party people take money. They just raise money so they can get their cut and just, you know, spend it doing whatever they want to do. To me, that was very, very brazen, considering that he actually is breaking the norm, having a challenger. I don't get what he hopes to accomplish with that. It was very, very interesting paradox to me. I'll try to get the sound clips for everybody.
I think what he's trying to do is the establishment, the moderate wing of the Republican is probably still the majority, you know, whether they show up and vote or not. That's the dangerous part right there, as we've seen with in some Indiana races and others that, you know, the one thing about the Tea Party crowd, they're going to show up and they're going to vote.
It's interesting,
point,
too, because our good friend Ken Mulman.
It's a huge gamble, you know, for the primary. Now, if he survives the primary, it's another huge gamble. It's like, okay, so you just alienate. You may not call him your base, but, yeah, in a general election in a state with more Democrats than Republicans, you just alienated a fairly large and very energized block of your own party, who, as it's been shown in some other elections, you know, you disrespect them too much. They'll just basically tell you to kiss their ass and they won't go vote.
Well, and see, that's exactly kind of where I'm going with this, because when you look at this in play, let's assume that Mitch does win the primary. You know, and I've often said, and I'll continue to say it, that I think he probably does have the upper hand in that race. Matt Bevin is going to be underfunded. He's not going to be able to get the base, you know, the old guard base that typically shows up in elections. So Matt Bevin is all or nothing with the Tea Party people right now. So let's assume that he does win that. When you alienate the Tea Party, typically in Mitch McConnell general elections, he doesn't win by a great majority. He wins by 2 or 3 points. He takes it in the gutter, makes his stick, and moves on. But the Democratic base smells blood in the water in this election. Even with Allison Lundgren Grimes not taking in the amount of money that people thought she was going to be able to put together, they smell blood in the water. The Democratic liberal base sees a chance to unseat Mitch McConnell in this election. The Tea Party typically are vindictive. I mean, let's face it. The Tea Partiers typically are all or nothing. You're either with us or against us. It's that simple. So with that in mind, we know, I think, that the Democrats are going to turn out in larger numbers than normal in next year's general election. The conservative base, the old guard that we talk about, they generally stay pretty consistent. Those numbers don't usually go up or down by a large amount. So if Allison Lundgren Grimes is going to have a larger than normal turnout for the Democrats in a race that Mitch McConnell typically squeaks through in every election, he has to have that Tea Party vote. And with the Tea Party being vindictive,
how that worked, you know,
exactly.
Rand in the general got a lot of, you know, he got the Republican base, but the blowout came because he had a very energized Tea Party. You know, the guys that might not go out and vote for the establishment candidate might just sit home and, you know, prepare to bitch and moan. Yeah, Rand Paul had the Tea Party, and after he won the primary, he had a solid base, and he blew Jack Conway out of the water.
You know, and that brings up another interesting dynamic, because Rand Paul went early and endorsed Mitch McConnell. With Mitch McConnell making these statements now and alienating the Tea Party base, does that backfire? Have any repercussions for Rand Paul?
No, I still think when it came to endorsing Mitch, Rand had to, as a matter of more of a macro political view, he had to. I mean, you can't come out as a junior senator and not stand with your senior senator. you gotta move past I think he did what he had
but
to
Mr.
do
Mensa.
I think
this is where I've got to call you Mr. Mensa, and I tell you why.
Uh-oh.
Because Well, I mean, you're smart enough to get into the macro and micro analysis of everything. I mean, you're a very intelligent person, okay? And I'm not saying that most people aren't intelligent people, but most people are average Americans who really don't look at the macro, you know, outcomes or the micro outcomes. They don't look that deep. They don't look that deep. So where you're probably theoretically right, and I would agree with you on that as far as what Rand's intentions are, the average voter, especially the Tea Party, are going to say, he sided with Mitch McConnell, and Mitch McConnell screwed us. So because the Tea Partiers are vindictive, as we just agreed on a minute ago, I can't help but think that there may be, I don't think it's going to be large scale, but there may be some backlash towards Rand Paul. And I hope not, because Rand Paul, as we talked about, is doing exactly what we had hoped he would do when he went to Washington, and he's doing a fantastic job, in my opinion. But, you know, I can't help but wonder if there is some backlash. You know, man, we got so much to get into, and we're going to run out of time. Guess what? Fastest hour on radio is gone again. I really wanted to get into the governor's race in Virginia, and I think we'll have to wait on that until tomorrow night. Ed, my apologies, man. Final thoughts.
Oh, well, final thoughts, you know, one, I think our viewers do get the macro and the micro end of it. But, you know, I think while we're touching on Rand Paul and the post-Rand Paul interview from the other night, good interview, by the way. And
thank you.
I think if Rand endorsing Mitch, I think it was the right move to do for national politics, D.C. politics. And I don't think it's going to hurt him too much in, you know, if he runs Senate. But yeah, you talk about the Tea Party backlash. The one thing about Rand is he's still one of only a very small handful of politicians that the Tea Party, you know, they might be pissed off, but they know, aside, you know, they may like Ted Cruz a little more, but you know, he's born in Canada, right?
Well,
hey, Justin Amash, he's just a congressman. So, you know, the competition is probably going to be Chris Christie, which is not a darling of the Tea Party. But I think he made a savvy move. If he, you know, the Tea Party is going to look, they're going to forgive and forget and say, you know what, he's still the best thing we've got going for, you know, for the foreseeable future.
Well, and I hope that you're right. I mean, I'm looking at the big picture myself here, and I think that Mitch just painted himself into a corner that's, you know, when the mainstream media gets through with this, and you know they're going to hammer the hell out of it, when they get through with this, Mitch is going to have some serious problems if he gets through the primary and beats Matt Bevin going into next year's general election. And I think that Kentucky overall, I mean, you know, let's face it, Matt Bevin, Mitch McConnell, either one are better than Allison Lundgren Grimes. But I think that he just aided her in her campaign efforts and money-raising efforts, and that could be problematic if he gets through the primary and has to face her next November. So it's going to be an interesting paradox. Tomorrow night, we will be talking a little bit about the governor's race. Still, the truth will be here at 7 o'clock, folks, as usual. And we'll be getting into the governor's race. Amazingly, I know, shock to everybody, there are all kinds of voting irregularities. Imagine that, showing up in Virginia that aided Democrat Terry McAuliffe when he won over Ken Cuccinelli in the governor's race there. Where this is going to lead, we don't know. There are investigations ongoing. Yes, that's true. So we're going to get into that story a little bit tomorrow and a whole host of others. In the meantime, Mr. Martin, thank you so much as always. We look forward to seeing you next week.
All right. You
All
have
right.
a good one, sir.
Thank you, sir. You too. And for the rest of you guys, have a great night. Take care. We will see you tomorrow night at 7 o'clock right here on the Ed Springsteen Show. Thanks.